Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Beth McCart, who is a senior recruiter with Ramsey Solutions and also the co-founder of Women Get It. So we will get into both of those things shortly, but welcome, Beth.
Thanks so much for having me, Lauren. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I've met you maybe twice, I think. But what I remember from meeting you both times is that you have this infectious and contagious energy that I think is just so fantastic. So I'm excited to talk to you during this podcast. I'm excited to talk about Ramsey. I'm excited to talk about your career path. So let's jump right into it. Let's first talk just to set the table. And then we're going to get into your background, but let's just talk a little bit about Ramsey Solutions. I'm such a fan. I probably have sent the 7 baby steps to like 15 people whenever they ask about entry level finances. So let's just set the table with what Ramsey Solutions is, and then we'll go back to learning about you and how you landed there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess the big personality on our team, our CEO, Dave Ramsey. So a lot of people might have not heard of Ramsey Solutions, but they might have heard of Dave Ramsey. We're one of the largest talk radio shows in the country. We're on about 650 radio stations across the US and about 17 million weekly listeners. So our story is that we help people that along their financial journey. So Dave, his story is he made millions of dollars in real estate in his 20s and went broke, lost everything, went through bankruptcy with a young family and really said, okay, what does like the Bible say about finances and how can I seek God in this? And so he came up with the 7 baby steps, got himself out of debt. And then people in his community were like, hey, like you were broke and now you're like, okay, like how did you do that? So we started counseling people that he knew that were going through similar situations, that were going through financial struggles. And he came up with Financial Peace University. So that's been about 30 years of teaching that, and about 6 million families have gone through Financial Peace. So we talk about the financial journey in terms of definitely something that's more behavioral. We talk about it not being a math problem. It's a psychological problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like people who gain weight, the weight is like the symptom of something else. Like something else is going on in your life that's like causing you to do this. And so it's really cool to see and be a part of a crusade and a mission that's so important, like in this world that we're living in right now. Like COVID was definitely a turning point for our company, to where I think a lot of people had their like, oh crap moments. Like, I never want to rely on, you know, the White House. I want to rely on my house for me to take care of my own family. And I think that there was a big wake up call in this country and just the toxic relationship that we have with money and how do we meet people where they're at and help them provide for their family and change their family tree. So that's why we exist.
Did you guys see a growth through COVID?
We did. Like everyone else in March, when, you know, we shut down with the rest of the country and went to go work from home. It was scary, especially like being a recruiter mm-hmm. in those times where they're like, hey, we're going to go on a hiring freeze because we don't know what's going to happen. And I was like, oh, am I going to lose my job? Like, this mm-hmm. is really scary. And so one of the things that I loved about our leadership team was they were like, you will know if you have to miss a paycheck. Like, we will over communicate those things. Like, you will know like way ahead of time if your job is going to be lost. Like, we're not gonna hide everything. And I had friends calling me like first day of shutdown, they lost their job because the company were freaking out and didn't know what decisions to make. And so that was interesting to go through. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to like 6 weeks later, saying like, hey, actually things are going to be okay. And we're pivoting and, you know, we're restructuring some teams, but in a year of COVID where we never had a layoff. And I think that's because, you know, we operate cash based and we don't take on debt as a company. And we didn't have to miss a paycheck. We didn't have a layoff. And in fact, we added like 170 something jobs last year and we had a record breaking revenue year. So I think that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, and certainly applying the same principles that, you know, the company teaches to everyone in their personal lives, applying them to business, it sounds like it's a very well-operated company. So that's awesome. Let's go back to learn a little bit more about you. So let's start with just some background, like, where are you from? Only child? What were your parents like? What were you like as a kid?
Yeah, so I grew up in Atlanta. So I feel like Atlanta is, when people say from Atlanta, like, hey, I grew up 3 hours outside the city, so I'm from Atlanta. Like, the metropolitan area is so big, specifically Gwinnett County, Georgia, so just northeast of Atlanta. Born and raised in that area, and I'm one of two. I have a younger sister, and she's my best friend. It wasn't always that way growing up. You know, we had the typical, you know, knockout, drag out fights, and but I mean, I learned a lot from her. I learned patience, number one, from, you know, being an older sibling, and you know, learned how to share and be a team player. And I had a great childhood. My dad was an entrepreneur. He actually sold his business like right before COVID. So that was a really cool thing to see. And so he's officially retired, but he owned an aerospace engineering firm. I remember a lot of our childhood spent, you know, traveling. He was on the road a lot, so we traveled with him when we could. And I think that's kind of where I got like my tech side in terms of how I thought about like my career. And I really enjoyed just learning about, hey, what kind of robots are you building at work? And what kind of patents are you filing for? And we talked a lot about that growing up. So I thought that was a really cool dynamic to grow up in. And then my mom called me yesterday. She officially turned in her notice.
Oh, she pumped?
Yeah, so I'm so excited for her. And she's been working for Wells Fargo for the past like 30 years. And just having like a really great role model. I just had a baby last July, and being a working mom is really hard. Mm-hmm. And I think it's definitely about work-life balance and having a community that you can count on. So my mom really relied on close friends and you know, I call it like second moms today. Mm-hmm. That really helped us. You know, get to point A and point B growing up to be a, you know, working mom is hard. And mm-hmm. So, I definitely don't take that for granted now. Like looking back, she set a really good example.
What were you like as a kid? Like what were some of your personality traits?
So are you familiar with the Enneagram?
No.
Yes.
Like no, a little bit only because I heard it from you once, but please explain it.
Yeah. So Enneagram, it's been around forever, but it's kind of making a resurgence in terms of like my friends group, they're talking about it and they're like, I'm this number, I'm that number. So it's any type of like personality assessment, like you might've heard of like Myers-Briggs or mm-hmm. some people use colors or the DISC assessment. But Enneagram is a really cool one. We've actually had a couple of people at events in town that have talked about it. And there's a book out there called like The Road Back to You. And it talks about the different Enneagram numbers. And it talks about like your internal motivator. So like what motivates you and what makes you tick and What characteristics do you have when you're healthy, and what characteristics do you have when you're not healthy? And what are some compatible personalities in terms of mates that you can have too? So it's really interesting personality assessment. So I'm a three, an achiever. And so what makes me tick is I love competitiveness. I grew up as a competitive gymnast and spent 14 years as a gymnast growing up, and, you know, 30 hours a week in the gym kind of deal. And so that definitely came up as just like, hey, I'm going to be the best at this, mm-hmm. and always tried my best to do those things. And so I was always like a really good student. My sister was also a really good student. We had like different personality types. Like she was more of like the rebel, and I was more of like the rule follower. And so it was really cool to kind of see that as like looking back in my childhood, and like how the woman I've become today is really a lot of that like gymnastics and discipline and competitiveness. And that has like translated over the years into my career too. So that's been cool to see.
What's the one or two things, either from your parents individually or together, what's like the one or two lessons that you remember learning from them as a kid that have really stuck with you throughout your life?
Oh gosh. So one that comes to mind is my dad has always said like, hey, I love you unconditionally. I love you no matter what. I don't care what you do. I'll love you anyways. And so if you like get into trouble, like, no, I won't love you any less. And I'm here to help you. And we can talk about those things, and we can have open conversations. And I never want you to feel like you can hide something, or you need to hide something from me, because you will get into trouble, or I will think less of you. So that was, we had always had a good relationship in terms of, I never felt like I had to hide anything. Especially as when you get into your teenage years and you start saying like, hey, maybe I can get away with this, or, you know, maybe I can go to this party and, you know, drink that, or, you know, do that. You know, there's all these things as teenagers. And my dad always says like, if you get in trouble, like call me, like, mm-hmm. I don't care. So,
My dad was very much like that too. It was like this understood thing of like, I'm not condoning that you do things that you shouldn't do, but if you end up doing something, you know, drinking, right? If you end up drinking, please call me, don't drive. But I'm not saying I'm not supporting that you should drink. But if you do, don't double down on a bad decision. So I'm with you. It was like the safe space of like unconditional love, which was quite helpful, honestly, because it was, you know, you never felt like you had to overly hide things, but there was still always this like, you know, they're still your parents. So it's, you know, they still set, you know, kind of encourage you like to do the right stuff, but, you know, right. Forgave you when you didn't. So anyway, go ahead. I resonate with you on that one for sure.
Yeah. It's like I had permission to fail. Mm-hmm. And I'm not afraid to try new things, or I'm not afraid of life experiences, because I'm like, hey, it's okay to fail. Like, and that's a part of life. And if you think you're going to get through life without failing, then hey, you got another thing coming. So that was something that has really stuck. And I really appreciate how, you know, my parents gave me guardrails. You know, they gave me, hey, these are our values, these are our guardrails. But just know if you go outside of these, like we won't love you less.
Mm-hmm. I love that term, guardrails. I'm going to steal mm-hmm. that. I think I'm giving you credit now for when I use it in the future. So talk a little bit about when you were a kid, what did you want to be, when you, I'm air quoting, grew up?
Yeah.
Gymnast?
No, because I knew that like I had to retire at the age of like 14, you know how it goes. So I had a couple of like dreams that just seem kind of silly today. But I was obsessed with like the Weather Channel for some reason. I don't know. In Atlanta, like the Weather Channel was headquartered there. So I always thought, oh, like, you know, I'll go work for the Weather Channel growing up and I'll be a meteorologist and do like, you know, all the arm waving in front of the camera. That seemed fun. And then I went to SeaWorld and I was like, I'm going to be a dolphin trainer. That's what I want to do. So yeah, I was the one that kind of like, if I saw something, I was like, I'm going to go after that. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't like consistent, across my childhood, you know, just like, you know, squirrel, I'll gotcha. Do that thing.
So then yeah. Did you go to college?
I did.
Went to college. What did you study? And then take us from college to your first job.
Yeah. So, I went to, the University of Georgia, in Athens, mm-hmm. In Athens, Georgia. So not too far away from home. And then, I was actually, I was planning to do accounting. I was declared like an accounting major and, I mentioned earlier, my dad was an entrepreneur and at the age of 14 years old, I started doing his payroll for all of his people that worked there. And I started doing accounting with accounts payable and accounts receivable and doing all the debits and credits. And I looking back, I'm like, Dad, you were crazy. Like you let a 14-year-old like do this. That I was like, okay, I'm going to do accounting because that's what I knew. I was like, oh, business accounting, like I've done some of this. I'm good at it. I'll just do that. And then I got into the business school and really hooked on to economics. At the time, it was 2008 and the housing crash started happening and I was just fascinated with what was going on in the banking industry and what was happening with the housing market. And I was just like, economics, that's kind of what I want to do. That's what I gravitated towards and the professors that were doing lectures on what was happening in real time. So I ended up doing my thesis in economics and graduated from the business school there. And then moved to Atlanta after graduating in 2010. So,
gotcha. So talk a little bit, and you gave me a little backstory on it, but I love the fact that you're willing to share the story. Talk about your progression from moving through your career and how you ultimately landed at Ramsey.
Yeah, so straight out of school in 2010, we were in a recession and I didn't know what I was going to do and ended up meeting a company at Georgia that was like on site for a career fair and took a job with them. It was a small recruiting like startup consulting company and took a job with them straight out of school. Worked there for 5 years and mostly a recruiting capacity and grew that company really quick. I mean, I was employee, I think number like 4 or so. And in 5 years, like we grew up to, you know, a couple hundred consultants. So it was pretty exciting. After that, I went to go work for an AWS consulting company out of Atlanta as well. And at the time, like AWS was, you know, we were the cool kids. We were doing AWS like cloud work and everyone's like, what is the cloud? Like, I'm scared of it. So that was pretty cool, like going in and talking to companies and being like, hey, you could literally not have the headache of having all this infrastructure on site or in a colo location and we can, you know, move it over into AWS and it would be like pennies on the dollar to what you're actually spending and, you know, maintenance cost and storage cost and things like that. So that was really cool to be a part of a new and innovative technology that looking back has changed the world and has changed technology significantly. And we were one of like the first companies that were doing this. So that was really neat.
Did people get that then? Or like when you're making the sales pitch, was it like, yeah, this makes total sense? Because now it's easy to look back and say, oh yeah, of course, this is a no-brainer. But in the thick of it, what was the feedback that you were getting?
Yeah, the feedback that I got, and it was two-sided. Like the true technologist got it. They were like, this is a game changer. Executives that signed off on budgets were scared. Mm-hmm. They were scared of change. They were scared of security. Was their main priority concern, especially in the retail space, because retailers were like, "Hey, we compete with Amazon, and you're now telling you want me to put all my data in there, mm-hmm. like with a competitor? Like that doesn't seem very smart." And then you saw with like the banking industry, they're still having a lot of adoption issues, which is why you see like fintech taking over, mm-hmm. A lot of like the traditional banking stuff, because they're still on mainframe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't even know if there still really is a good technology out there that takes stuff from mainframe over in AWS. Like when I was working in the field, there was some kind of like progression, right? Where you've moved from like mainframe to like on-prem and was doing some VMware or even some virtual servers in a colo location. Like there was some sign of progression, but
right.
Going from mainframe directly into AWS was something that was like, yeah, that's, we don't know if we can do that.
That's
like,
a leap. Sure. Yeah. Perfect. Continue. I just want to get your two cents on that. But so you're working there and then keep going.
Yeah. So one of the things that they asked me to do at that time was to move to Nashville. At the time, AWS had no presence in the state of Tennessee. They had no boots on the ground. So it was people coming in from like the Raleigh markets or Atlanta or Chicago, New York, like coming into Nashville, but there was actually no representation on site in the city. And so they asked me, hey, this could be a really good opportunity for you. Why don't you move up to Nashville? And I was like, that sounds cool. So we started making plans to do that. And I started building a house in Nashville. And right in the middle of that, like a couple weeks before we were like putting our house in the market in Atlanta, my husband got really sick. He was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis and had a really severe case. It's something that he didn't seek help on for a really, really long time. And so by the time he got help, it was really bad.
What is that? Can you elaborate on what that is for people that don't know?
Yeah, so ulcerative colitis, or sometimes it's short for UC, is an autoimmune disease, and it attacks specifically your large intestines. So you might have heard of Crohn's disease. So Crohn's is kind of like a sister disease. Crohn's actually attacks your whole system. So like small intestines and large intestines, and sometimes like even like your stomach as well. So specifically like his large intestines was really diseased. And I don't know if you have had a situation with, a male loved one in your life that was like, I'm fine. Like life is good. I'm not that sick. I don't need to go see a doctor. Like it'll just go away. Literally that happened for a long time, for years. Mm-hmm. And, we were actually in Hawaii on a family vacation, and he had a major flare-up. And when you have flare-ups with UC, literally you're going to the bathroom all the time. You have anxiety about where the nearest bathroom is. And if you go into a building, you have to know right away where the bathroom is or what's the closest one. And so that caused a lot of anxiety just him like mentally mm-hmm. on that. And he was like, okay, enough is enough. Like, I'm going to go see a doctor when we get back from our vacation. And he was set up for a doctor's appointment, and they put a scope in to see what was going on. And after they got done with the procedure, they called me back. And I remember like walking back to see him in the recovery room, and then like looking in the procedure room, and there's blood literally all over the floor, and thinking like, what happened? Like, what's going on? And the doctor was like, your husband's really sick. He needs to be admitted immediately. This is really bad. And he let it go for too long. And so my husband was like, how long am I going to be in the hospital? He was like, 1 to 2 days, and they're like, no, this could be like months that you're going to be in there for. And so we were at Emory in Atlanta, and we ended up transferring to another hospital that was a little closer to home, that we still had a good team of doctors. Mm-hmm. So we were in the hospital from literally like, I want to say like March, the good chunk of 2016. So I would say from March to August, like pretty much solid. There was a couple of days that we were out, but then had to go back in, and where he would have like a reaction to a medication and be in the ICU, or he had several surgeries where we had to get, portions of his intestines taken out. And a couple years later, he's had more surgery, and now it's his large intestines is completely gone. So he had all of it removed.
Wow.
But it was really scary. Like, he had something called toxic megacolon, and they told us that they had never seen a case of it before in the States, and that it was a really rare, and that they mostly see it in third world countries for people who don't seek treatment. And remember the thing that I said about, not him seeking treatment, and mm-hmm. this is how bad it got. So yeah, when his intestines ruptured and he was going septic and had to have emergency surgery, they were saying, hey, 80% chance he doesn't make it. And so that was rough. That was, we're in our 20s at this point and saying like, what? Like, we're supposed to be young. We're supposed to be healthy. And, we have a high deductible health insurance plan, and how are we going to pay for this? And it was hard. It was really, really hard. And so he was on disability the whole year. We were like in the middle of the move. I sold the house and I didn't even tell him, because I was like, I didn't want him to think about like packing up a whole house and like moving to Nashville. And so I did the closing by myself.
Yeah.
And then came to the hospital right after and was just like, hey, I sold the house. Here's the check.
Was he just like, whatever?
And he was like, what? Like, we're homeless? What's going on? So yeah, that was pretty scary. We, at that point, this came out of nowhere. We were making really good money. We had at the time, no children. I think the official word is dink, dual income, no kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we're living that dink life, and things were going really well until it wasn't. And, we were, even though we were making really good money, like we were living paycheck to paycheck, and, we were like, oh, okay, the air conditioning went out. That's $15,000. Let's just open up a line of credit and do that. Or, oh, we want to do some yard work and take down some trees. Okay, we'll take out a loan for $10,000 to do that. And then it was like all these debts like adding up, and we were like, oh, we can make the payments. We're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had this happen. And then we were thinking about like, oh my gosh, are we going to lose the house? So it was kind of a blessing that like the Nashville thing was kind of happening at the same time, to where we could sell it anyways, because that's what we were planning on. So yeah, we ended up, selling the house, moving in with my parents for a short period of time while our house is being built up in Nashville. And then officially made the move at the end of 2016. Shortly thereafter, I really wasn't like looking for a position. One of my, well, now friends, I didn't know her at the time. It's like, you know, one of those random LinkedIn connections that shows up on your feed and said, hey, I have an opening on my team if anyone's interested. And I was like, oh, I'll click to see if I know of anyone who might be a good fit. Read the job description and I was like, did I write that? Like, I think I wrote that. and I was just like, okay, well, I'll just apply and kind of see what happens. And didn't know anything about Ramsey Solutions. Knew Dave was a guy on the radio.
And that was it. Like, not familiar with his content or
nothing.
Gotcha.
Nothing. And before we sold the house, we were about $75,000 worth of debt, and we had knocked it down to about 50 after we sold the house. And so I got a call pretty quickly saying, hey, we want to set up a time to interview. And so I was going through the interview process and watching all the YouTube videos, and me and my husband was like, this is crazy. Like, this, like, even if you don't get this job, like, this is something that we need to do. And we paid off, within 14 months, about $48,000 worth of debt.
And when you're saying something we need to do, you mean the seven baby steps?
The seven baby steps. So for a quick crash course in what the seven baby steps are, people are like, what is baby steps? Baby what? So baby steps, the first step is to save $1,000 in your emergency fund. So just getting like, the quick money in there into a savings account, because most Americans like can't even afford a $400 like emergency expense. So that's really important. Number one. Number two, like list your debts from smallest to largest. And we call it the debt snowball. So just tackle the smallest debt first and then roll in there. The reason why we do that instead of like maybe listing interest rates, the smallest to largest interest rates, it's kind of like weight loss. If you lose a pound, you're more susceptible to like be encouraged to like lose that second pound, right? So it's like psychological behavior. Debt is not a behavior problem, or not a math problem, it's a behavior problem. Mm-hmm. And so just getting those small wins, you're like, yes, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. So so listing all your debts from smallest to largest and paying them off in order. Step three is 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. And then step four is 15% of retirement. And then like five, six, and seven is investing, paying off the house. And then seven is like living like no one else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a true testament to that and how it's worked for us. So now we're working on paying off our house, which is awesome, but seems like a really big hill to climb, to be honest with you.
Well, I am with you. I live that Ramsey life. I love that. The debt-free thing, just I'm totally on board with that. And I first saw it from Dave talking, and I was like, and I'd always thought that way, but the way that he laid it out, I was like, makes total sense. So I love that. I love his content tied to that. So you sit there and you do it. You and your husband decide, hey, we can do this at the same time that you're applying for the job.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the last thing that we do at Ramsey, like family is a big core value. And my husband feels like an extended, team member here. And one of the unique things that we do as a part of our interview process is that we invite the family in as part of the last steps. And as a recruiter, like I personally love it because if I can get the family on board with them accepting, then I have a much higher chance of actually like having that candidate accept the position. But it was really cool to see like my husband like asking questions and being on board with the plan, and him sharing our story about how we're going through it and start, you know, we call it plastic surgery. We were cutting up our credit cards. Like we were going to be all in if we were going to do this. And I would change nothing. It's definitely changed our lives. And in fact, another like life-changing thing that we had happen while we were going through and working to paying off things, we found out that we were going to have fertility problems. And, you know, we had just been through this like huge health crisis, and it's just like, oh gosh, now we have to deal with this. Mm-hmm. That's not something that I want to deal with, but because of like the Ramsey plan, like we were able to cash flow, you know, our IVF process. It went through IVF twice, and we didn't have to worry about choosing between starting a family and choosing our finances. Mm-hmm. So that was awesome and such a huge blessing to our family that we could do this and not have to worry. And so we were blessed with our miracle baby last year, Abigail. Yay.
Yes.
I cried a lot of tears over her, so she's got to be worth it.
I'm sure she is. I'm sure she's beautiful. Congratulations again on that. I know I'm a mom of two, so it's just, you can't really explain it until you're there, until you're in it and you're holding that little baby in your arms.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's so perfect.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, spoken like a true mom. Yes. So what for you, talking about your job with Ramsey, what is the best part of recruiting? And what's the underbelly, the part that people don't necessarily talk about, or the hidden, you know, dark side of it?
Yeah, so the best part by far is putting people in better situations than they are currently. So if someone doesn't really have like a big motivator, they're just kind of like, oh, I'm just kind of seeing what's out there. Like, I would urge them to not change jobs, because there's a lot of like unknowns when changing jobs. Like if you make a pro and con list, you know, it's like, oh, should I change jobs or should I not? Like there's a lot of unknowns. And so if you don't have a reason to change, if you don't have a motivator to change, I recommend people like kind of staying and seeing where their next, thinking about their next season before they actually make the jump. So I always want to put people in a better situation than they're at currently. And if it's not, then that's okay. Like we can be friends and still, you know, talk and see if something happens down the future. But I love that aspect of it. And working with people and not treating them like a transaction. I feel like a lot of recruiters, they're just like, oh, I'm looking for bodies. I just want a, you know, warm person in the seat. And I do take my job seriously. And I know that, like, you know, we relocate a lot of people here to Nashville. We have a huge talent shortage in the city. So relocation is a part of my everyday life. And, but I know, like, I'm literally changing their lives by mm-hmm. moving here. So that's really important.
Well, the fact that you own that and take that responsibility, and I'm right there with you on it, right? I mean, our core business is a recruiting company. My core business is an IT and marketing recruiting company. But it's like you're affecting people's lives, and it's not anything to joke about, right? Like those people have families or whatever their support, whatever, supporting themselves, supporting their families. So it is like you're talking about people's livelihood. So to try to push somebody into a position that isn't a fit for them is almost just, it's so self-serving that you can't in any good faith, like hang your head, you know, or go to sleep at night and feel good about that, right? You have to be doing it knowing that you really believe you're making a positive change for this person. So just echoing what you said, I love that. I love that. I think it's so true. The ripple effect of what you're doing and putting people in jobs and then, you know, really changing their lives. So continue with that though. What you love about it, and then what's the part about it that is less glamorous?
So I guess the less glamorous piece is sometimes like how volatile it is. If anyone has been recruiting for any period of time, you know that the highs are high and the lows are low. And so like, if you need your life to be like this, like do not get into recruiting. It's probably the most like roller coaster ride of your life. You know, and there's a lot of disappointments. And one of the things that I talked to my team about is like, you can't control anything. Like you can do your best job, but at the end of the day, like the thing that we are selling, you know, are people, and people are extremely unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really have a lot of integrity issues just with the candidates that we deal with at Ramsey. But when I was in agency world, and you did see a lot of that, and you did see people not pass background checks and drug tests and things like that when you're dealing with, you know, especially lower level positions. And so that can be like really disappointing when it's like, hey, the stars lined up and we made a match. And it's just like, now you have to start all over.
Right. Right. I have three more questions before we get to rapid fire. So my first one is, what advice would you give your younger self?
Gosh, I would say it's okay not to be perfect. I've struggled with that, and I hate disappointing people. I hate not doing a good job. That comes out in the Enneagram 3, if you read a lot of that. Like, that is something that I really struggle with, and something that I'm still working on.
And what, how do you define success?
That's a really good question. I think that, and I can answer that two ways. How do I define success, and what do I think is a successful life? And sometimes I think those are two different answers. So I try and concentrate on, because when I think about success, I think about like work and accomplishing goals and like doing all those things. But when I think of like, what is a successful life, it's relationships, and like, how do I impact others, and how do I make a real difference in this world, and the words that I say matter. And so if you would have asked me, like, you know, 10 years ago, what does success look like? I'm like, oh, I want a great job. You know, I want this house. You know, I want to go on these trips. I want all these things. And now I'm like, what's the legacy I'm going to leave behind? What are the relationships that I'm building today that will exist to make an impact beyond the years that I'm here? Mm-hmm. So that's how I'd answer that.
I love that. That's very, very well said. I love that. My last question is tied to women. Is it Women Get It or Women Get IT? I want to make sure I say it right.
Yeah, it's either way. That's like the kind of beauty of it.
Okay.
We get it and we get IT.
Yeah. Ah, I love it. I love it. So you're the co-founder of it. So just share with the audience what that is and what inspired you to start that.
Yeah, so Women Get It is a mentoring organization, helping women who are new to technology, who are interested in the field, or maybe they left the IT field to raise a family, and now their skills have become antiquated, and they don't know how to, you know, do that reset and get up to speed again. So we partner with local professionals that help them open doors and provide mentorship to these women who are wanting to grow or get into the IT space. So how it kind of happened was I was having conversations with these executive leaders saying, hey, you have diversity issues on your team, and how are we going to solve that? And you can't just like borrow employees from other companies. Like, you're literally not adding new people to the talent pool. And so how do we make that happen? And that's how Women Get It was born. And we have about 1,500 people involved in the Nashville area. So it's grown a lot over the past couple of years.
And where do people go if they want to get more information or learn about it?
Yeah. So you can go to Women Get It's website. We're also, we have Instagram and Facebook. We kind of took like a hiatus last year because all of our events were in person, and COVID mm-hmm. kind of changed that. So we're kind of messing around with virtual events this year. I think we have one coming up in March to celebrate International Women's Day. So we're trying some new things to get our community back up and going until, you know, this passes and we can meet in person again.
Perfect. And if people want to, this is my last question before I go to rapid fire and close this out. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is probably the best way. I think I'm the only Beth McCart on LinkedIn. I'll have to think there's like an Elizabeth or like a Bethany or something like that. But
imposter.
Yeah. Make it count. No, just kidding. So yeah, Beth McCart on LinkedIn. And I'm happy to connect with people there and love messaging people and talking to people. Even if it's just to like grab a virtual coffee and say, hey, like I'm down for that.
Perfect. Is there anything else that you would like to cover or highlight that we didn't talk about?
We covered a lot, so I think I'm good.
You're square. All right. All right. I'm going to go into, before I close this out, I'm going to go into rapid fire. These are just like one word answers. First thing that comes to mind between the two choices that I give you. There's like six or seven questions.
Okay.
All right. Netflix or cable?
Netflix.
Netflix or Hulu?
Netflix.
Okay. Any show on Netflix?
Oh, I'm watching Bridgerton right now.
Oh, nice. I just finished that. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I kind of like it. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Gossip Girl meets 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah.
That is a good description of it. That is a good description of it. All right. Snow or beach?
Beach.
Heels or flats?
Flats. And that's crazy because I'm 4'11". Like, I should say heels.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Dance or sing?
Oh, gosh. I'm terrible at both. So I guess dance.
Carpet or hardwood?
Hardwood.
And the last one, stone or brick?
Brick.
Brick. All right. Beth, this has been such a pleasure. Like I said, I've only met you one or two times, and getting to know you a little bit better on this was just fantastic. I love your energy. I love your spirit. I love everything that, all the goodness that you're trying to put out into the world. So it's been really a pleasure. I'm glad that we were able to do this.
Yeah. Thanks, Lauren, for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And again, my guest is Beth McCart, and we will see you all next time. Thanks.